is Hockey Central with Jeff Merrick, Anthony Stewart, and Justin Bourne on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Okay, here we go. 2 hours of your favorite hockey talk program right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Sam O'Castle on Sportsnet, and the NHL Network. Branding out of the way, Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart and Justin Bourne. You'll have to excuse the Louis Vuittons under my eyes. It was Vancouver Canucks, Chicago Blackhawks, Sedin night last night. And although it was a late one, man, that was a lot of fun to be part of from our tiny little studio in Toronto. Shorty did a great job announcing the entire thing. John Shorthouse is Cadillac of broadcasters. And Dan Murphy, who I hope was wearing running shoes because he was all over Rogers Arena interviewing everybody, grabbing alumni, grabbing the Sedins, grabbing anyone, former general managers. You know, Elliot Friedman brought up this this point. Oh, good afternoon, by the way, guys.
Hey, how's it going? Hey, how are you?
As I just start talking here. Elliot Friedman brought up a great point. So you saw that panel yesterday. Okay, everyone's around watching the Sedins as 22 and 33 go to the rafters. There's a lot of people there, some sitting right next to each other, who really don't like each other.
Oh, yeah?
Like, really don't like each other, Justin. You know, hockey people, Stewie, can be vindictive when you make your mind up about someone. You'll say all the right things publicly, but you know.
Yeah.
You know. There are a lot of those people that really did not like being in the other person's presence last night, but because it was Henrik and Daniel, you put it aside and you go to the events. Thoughts on the Sedins, 22 and 33 to the rafters. Kickoff Hockey Central.
They were just, you know, we had Todd Bertuzzi on yesterday.
Saw that, yeah.
And he said something that really caught my ear, which was they were perfect for the clutch and grab era. They were perfect clutch and grab superstars. And generally when we think about, you know, NHL players that are skilled and scorers, we think, boy, what if they played in an era without so much clutch and grab and it opened up and bigger ice and what would they do then? He pointed out that they're perfect for that era of, because they could make plays in small areas and get away from, you know, they could outthink the picks and set their own picks and run these little plays below the goal line where in actuality, they weren't burners. You know, they weren't fast guys. So
they
were perfect for the era that was slow and clogged up because they could find the little nooks and crannies better than anyone.
Huh. Yeah, I know they say the best brother duo is the Gretzky's, but I think it's absolutely these two.
4 points from Brent.
No, but I had the pleasure of playing against both of them, and they're definitely world-class players. And what I found interesting was sort of the story behind on how they got there and how Berkey had to get the deal done. Everyone thought it was just an easy deal. Hey, I got two brothers I want to draft, and you mind doing me a favor here? He had to pull a lot of strings to make it happen. And, you know,
he said, by the way, yesterday that on the night before the draft, this 1999 Boston draft, the night before he was talking to Dudley, and Dudley was, of course, with, you know, one of the key pieces to that trade. And I think Dudley wanted a second and Berkey was offering a third or two thirds or something. And they both sort of hung up the phone and went to bed. And Berkey told his wife, I think I'm getting fired because I'm doing all this work and I've hit a roadblock. And I've just traded Brian McCabe and a first for Pavel Brendl. I'm going to get fired. Yeah. Like, you're right. So the way that Rubik's Cube came together, we tend to overlook that. But that was key to all of this. Yeah.
And did you see his kids killing him on Twitter?
Oh, he got roasted.
Molly and Katie.
So good.
I guess, yeah, one of the girls
the
was Burke saying,
the Burke girls
like,
are fantastic.
Like,
they're
hey, everyone's reminiscing about the trade. And she was like, do you remember the time you left my birthday party? And I guess it was a big deal. She was upset and said something like, how will you remember this decision? Yeah. And she said, fondly, it turns out.
And another thing about last night, too, and a lot of people are starting to figure out what, you know, us around here knew that, you know, Kevin BX is really good behind the microphone.
Ooh, and he freestyled the whole thing. Yeah. You noticed the lack of script.
Yeah. So that shows, you know, the collective juices that he has all away from the rink. So definitely amazing for the two of them. They're definitely surefire Hall of Famers, best brothers duos in the NHL in history.
Yeah. They, what do they used to say? They communicated with each other like dolphins. There's this language that nobody else understood.
And I just want to say this too. It's so hard playing against your brother. Like I played with my brother two shifts in junior. We almost killed each other. Because I'm like, because he was a rookie. And I'm like, you're a rookie. You don't even know how to play the game. And then another time, we almost fought each other playing in the BioSteel camp. And we were on the same line.
Same team? And you
yeah,
fought
same
each
line.
Other.
Yeah.
Same line.
Yeah.
Did he give you the puck or what?
every little play, he's like, that's a bad play. That's a bad play. If you're playing defense, play defensive. By the end of it, I'm like, shut up. He's like, what? He almost fought me on the bench. And Matt Nicklaus is like, guys, calm down. So it's tough playing with your brother, but it just shows how great of a player they are, how good their bond was, you know, to have a career together and put up over 1,000 points each.
You know, you're nibbling around a really interesting issue is how much can you say to your line mates on the bench about what they should have done?
Yeah.
Because, like, when it's your brother, you can say whatever, right? Like, yeah. In your own house, you just, yeah. You know, I think that happens with their own spouses where sometimes it's best just to shut up.
As a pro, I honestly would not be able to because we'd just be critiquing each other the whole time at the rink. Oh, you're eating a little bit too much pasta there. And yeah, it would be
another bun on your plate. Is that a second bun I see?
Yeah, so that's the Sedins could do that and never have any sort of falling out like that. It's a rarity, and I always struggled with that because I'm an over apologizer. I saw you there. Sorry, I should have got that to you. And eventually, it's like, well, shut up. Yeah. Like you've pointed out that make you've been terrible tonight, and either make the play or you know. So it's interesting, like how much you're actually allowed to say or should say on the bench.
You know, that was as Todd Bertuzzi mentioned. You know, the good clutching grab hockey players, the Sedins were. That was also an era too where it was sprint hockey. Now it's still sprint hockey, but we have things like the slot line, the Royal Road. You know, have to move the puck east and west, and what you do with the puck, and it's up and it's down, it's high tip, and they played in that era where it was sprints. Up and down the ice, and everybody was just push the puck forward. That was how hockey was played. It was almost like table hockey, right? Just get it forward fast as you can. And everybody was doing that. And they were, I mean, I know we always focus on, you know, cycle, look for Michael, but they were, you know, the only tandem in the NHL on a consistent basis to go east-west.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're right. They weren't burners. They didn't have the hardest shots. They're the most creative.
Yeah, and you're right that like, you know, Gretzky is known for the behind-the-net play, but actually is a line to use that area to relieve pressure and change sides. They did that so well, and we're really at the forefront of where the game is now. They're just a step ahead of it.
To me, I will always, because there are moments where you look at the game and you think to yourself, Gretzky. Like, whenever anyone sets up behind the net, guys, whenever anybody sets up behind the net, what are you thinking?
Sveshnikov.
No, sets up, yes. Not swings behind the net.
Yes.
You set up behind the net, everyone's going, Gretzky.
Gretzky in his office,
right?
Yeah.
You see the one-timer from the, from the Ovechkin spot, you're thinking, okay, well, that's Ovechkin's move. I'm telling you, man, every time I see that high tip now, and forever, right? Forever, for the rest of my life, I will think Sedins when I see that high tip.
Same with Newell Brown ran the power play when they were there, and they were the first sort of bumper guys, like pressure relief valve, yes. You know, like guys under stress, put it in the middle, kick it out from there. So they were kind of the first guys at the forefront of that. What's interesting is, you know, you've done something special when you change how the game is played. And with Gretzky now, you try to stop behind the net, the world closes in on you fast. Both guys are at both posts with sticks. You got nowhere to go. And D had to change that because you couldn't give a guy too much time back there. I feel like the Sedins kind of changed how you have to play offensively, you know, just in seeing, using the whole rink and changing sides.
I think the casual fan won't understand that bumper position. It's probably one of the hardest positions to play because there's guys coming at you from all different angles. And you know when you get that puck, you're not going to have enough time. And you have to be a special skilled player to actually make plays from that. I was, you know, sometimes in the power play, they'd put me there to be the, you know, I'd get the bump pass into the middle to get a shot off. I wouldn't hit the net.
Yeah,
but there's guys
shot.
That
it's coming from
there's guys
spot.
That practice that probably for half an hour after practice. It's such a tough play when you don't know where the pressure's coming from because, you know, you got the bit of the blinders on. You want to get that puck on net as quick as possible or make a play, and there could be a stick coming from your left, right. There could be a flying elbow coming from behind you.
It's a 360
degree.
It's
literally like, oh, crap moment. And I'm getting goosebumps thinking about that pressure. I'm like, oh, my gosh, someone's coming to get me. It's a tough play.
It is because it's
They made it look easy.
It's all around you, right? Yeah. Like, you have to know how the play is unfolding, like, in every direction. And It's a cerebral position, but it's also, it takes work ethic because you're everyone's relief. Like, you're first on puck recoveries and support, you know, the puck, you know, missed shots, and it's a tough spot, and you're very active.
The Sedins are number one on the list. This afternoon, as we kick off the Fast Five. The Sedins, the jerseys raised, the Raptors in Vancouver. I know we just spent the first 9 minutes talking about Henrik and Daniel. Is there anything else that you guys want to add about either what we saw last night or what we saw for 17 seasons in the NHL?
Yeah, I'll just say that I thought that Kevin Bieksa mentioned that the way their influence on the locker room there will stick around for the next 10, 20 years, and that'll be their influence. They've influenced Canuck culture, the way to do things, and just how to carry yourself. So I think, as again, having that influence is
important. Yeah, to build on that point, that should be a message to the young kids. He's not talking about goals and assists and amazing plays. He's talking about the influence and the positivity and the culture in the room. So the young kids that think, hey, I just got to put up points. There's a lot more to that, to being a Hall of Famer or being just a regular National Hockey League player.
And you can tell how much Vancouver Canucks fans not just love the Sedins too, but love that era of Vancouver Canuck. And I know Ryan Kesler was really sensitive to the fact that he did not want to get booed. We all know how it ended for Ryan Kesler in Vancouver. And I'm sure, listen, hindsight is 2020. We all have things that we regret. And if we could do things over again, we'd probably choose to do so. And Ryan Kesler feels that way. It's good to see the Vancouver Canucks fans give him an ovation.
Yeah, yesterday. It's great. But quickly, say they get into management or coaching. Do they hire them both collectively?
Or? Oh, yeah. They're really expensive because it's two salaries.
GM, assistant GM. Or
now, can you think independently or is this a...
Nah, it's showbiz package deal. Speaking of that game, Jacob Markstrom, 49 saves, a shutout win over the Blackhawks yesterday. What a performance. And it was a Swedish... Like, if you just looked at the shots and didn't watch the game at all, you'd say, oh, man, Hawks must have starched the Canucks on Sedin night.
Chicago sort of caught him sleeping there with 13 shots. It was 13-0 halfway through the first period, and he really stood on his head to keep them in the game. And Brandon Sutter had a goal and two assists, one of my favorite players in the NHL. So they got the 3-0 victory. Now they maintain their 3-point lead on the Pacific Division over the Edmonton Oilers with 69 points.
Okay, so Leon Draisaitl leads the NHL in points, and now we have a new Rocket Richard Trophy leader. The trophy, named after the Montreal Canadiens great, is led by a Boston Bruin. David Pastrnak takes over the NHL goal lead with a hat trick last night against Montreal.
Wow, what a goal, by the way. The Brad Marchand dangle through Petrie and
through his own skates. And
stay tuned. I'll be doing a breakdown on that later in the digital studio. But that was unbelievable. And his third goal was such a, like, when things are going right for you, and you just kind of, I don't know, put this on net and you never know. I think of, like, James Neal's four-goal game at the start of the season where you're just like, you just start putting stuff on net.
Going in net.
41 on the season, playing with that line. That's a pretty sweet spot, but he's making a count.
Speaking of Montreal, Shea Weber, 4-6 with an ankle sprain. Montreal, Stewie, dodges. It's never good when your player is injured, but it could have been worse. This is Montreal dodging a big bullet here.
Yes, much better prognosis than originally thought. People thought it was going to be a lot worse. So 4 to 6 weeks, they can live with that. People thought possibly a career ending, but it's a big blow nonetheless for the Montreal Canadiens. He was having a Norris-type season with 34 points in 55 games, and
It looked really good.
Yeah,
like he was dropping down off the point for shots.
He looked like
moving
a young Shea Weber, yeah. So Shea Weber looked like a Shea Weber, but it's still a big blow for the Montreal Canadiens now as they sit 7 points out of a playoff spot, and they're now, tasked with, are they going to be buyers or sellers, or everything must go sellers? Liquidators.
What was it here in Toronto? Honest Bob's, Honest...
Honest Ed's. Come on, BC guy. Honest Ed's.
I moved here and it's shut down.
Glorum Bathurst, come on. Legendary.
I think if you have COVID, you have a chance, so...
Yeah, what happens to your guy? What happens with your guy there, Stewie?
I say they trade him for some assets and he resigns in the summer.
Oh, yeah, 3 years, $15 million.
Yeah, why not?
And then what happens?
Kicking the Gagarin Cup.
And he comes to Toronto and he wins
the
Cup.
That movie, yeah. Cal Peterson shuts down the Flames, denying them of a third straight win, and Milan Lucic fights again.
Yeah, that was disappointing for the Calgary Flames. You see the standings, as congested as they are. You see the Kings coming in on a losing streak and, with a backup goaltender in net, and you're kind of licking your chops. But some nights they just lack pop right now, the Calgary Flames. I'm just not sure what it is. But they don't seem to have that, Kachuk's the only guy who's there every night. Every night you hear his name, see him do something, he's trying to drag that team through. But missing Giordano is such a big loss for them because he's that bit of consistency that tent-pole player they could count on that holds everything up every night. I suspect they're going to struggle in his absence.
That was the Fast Five. Coming up still, bottom of this hour, Jim Rutherford, Pittsburgh Penguins Executive VP and General Manager. We'll talk about the Jason Zucker trade and all things Pens. Also, we'll talk to Marty Turco. What is this, Goalies Day? Jim Rutherford, we have Marty Turco. Marty Turco, Dallas Stars special assistant to the president, will be aboard in hour two. The Dallas Stars are in Toronto to face off against the Maple Leafs. And as we talk about goaltenders, Frederik Andersen back between the pipes. What do we expect this evening, gentlemen?
This is good news for Toronto. I know there is some Jack Campbell buzz. Should they let him keep riding this and see what they got in him? It's like, no. Let's get Freddie in net. He's the guy. Let's get him back rolling here. And
what's the saying you guys always have? You can't let someone injure themselves out of their spot.
Yeah, that seems pretty reasonable. And not to mention, I mean, he's the guy. If he's not as good as Freddie Andersen can be, they don't have much of a hope this season to go deep. So good that he's back. I think Hutchinson, I believe, has been put on waivers, or at least isn't with the team right now. So I expect he'll be moving along, and all should be right in the Leafs' crease.
Yeah, I think you'll see a rest and relaxed Freddie Andersen, because there was reports that he was going to play last game, and they gave him an extra couple days off, so he's going to come in refreshed. And I think he's probably going to be a little bit more motivated now that there's reports out there with the goalie. But that's good. That friendly competition is good for the team, because it's just going to push him to be better. But let's not fool ourselves. Freddie Andersen is the number one. He is the number one for this year and next year, and as long as he wants to be here. So he's that good of a goaltender. He's an all-star. He scored 50 in 07. But he's...
You guys remember that?
he's their go-to guy. He's the pillar. He's the reason why they're in this position where they are right now at this point of the season.
That's awesome. Michael Hutchinson, by the way, is indeed on waivers.
He is, okay.
11 games around the NHL. Dallas and Toronto is one of them. I want to throw this in quickly. Got this on Tuesday night doing ice surfing. As I get there, Stan Narodka, who does stats for us on ice surfing, works for Hockey Night in Canada, does regional broadcasts with the St. Louis Blues, the Colorado Avalanche. He's freestyle with everybody, Buffalo Sabres, Boston Bruins. He's done it all. Stan is one of the hidden gems in this industry. He hands me this card, and he says... here's a little something for you, Stewie and Justin, on Thursday. So tonight, the Washington Capitals take on the Colorado Avalanche. Alexander Ovechkin is chasing which goal plateau?
700.
700. Is it destiny for Ovechkin tonight? Washington at Colorado on the NHL schedule this season is game number?
700?
888.
888.
Yeah, he wears number 8. I'm not sure if you're familiar with this.
So you're saying he scored
Washington.
3 goals?
I'm saying it's 3-8.
He did say that.
Yeah, true.
I like that.
Yeah.
That's a little slot machine stuff from Stan Narodka.
That's from our man Stanley. Thanks for that one. Do we step away? Matty Marchese says, hold on, do a little bit more. Okay, so you know what? Let's drill down a little bit on the Toronto Maple Leafs. I want to get your thoughts on the Pierre Engvall contract. $1.25 million. And this is a guy that showed up with the Marlies organization a couple of seasons ago, raw, physical specimen, could move his feet. You said to yourself, okay, there's a potential for an NHLer here. This guy needs polish, comes in as a fourth line complement to the Colin Greening and Freddie Gauthier fourth line with the Marlies, and turned himself, albeit with a lot of help, into an NHLer, and is rewarded with his... first, I mean, it's a modest bump. It's a modest increase in pay, but enough of my blathering. Your thoughts on the Pierre Engvall deal?
I like it. He's probably one of the biggest pleasantly surprises of this Toronto Maple Leaf team, and he's probably started number 17th or 18th forward on the depth chart, and he came in and stole guys' jobs. He made other guys expendable. He got guys shipped out of town. He got guys sent down to the minors because he came in and proved that he's an everyday NHLer. And, I think part of that maybe was because Sheldon Keefe came in and he's familiar with them, but he earned his job. Nobody handed anything into him when he came up. No one was sure how long he was going to stay. But just his confidence with the puck, and as a fourth-line guy, you usually have that anxiety where you just got to get rid of the puck. You don't want to make mistakes. But he's not afraid to make a mistake. You know, he's on the penalty kill. I mentioned this yesterday, where instead of just dumping it in and changing, he'll turn up and go back against the grain to make a play back to the defense, as opposed to just getting it deep in it and getting out of there. So I like him. He's big. He's strong. He can skate. And I think at the end of this, probably by mid midpoint next season, he's going to look like a steal, you know, based on the number that he's getting.
So yeah. For a while there, you were tweeting about Engvall all the time. I can recall talking to someone in the Maple Leafs organization. I said, what should I know about Engvall? And the first thing out of this person's mouth was, he sweats a lot.
It didn't work.
You know, just how guys, like, really, like, everyone sweats.
There's a guy right here that does
really
that. He's sweating right now.
Really, is that a commodity? Because I really can be in the NHL tomorrow if you want.
Drenches it. But for the longest time, I used to always make the joke, anything I need to know about Pierre Engvall, I just find on your Twitter timeline, you're on him for a while.
Yeah, the biggest thing is, you know, we had Rich Peverly on the show a week or two ago, and he talked about, if you're not scoring goals, what else do you do? And Toronto has goal scorers. They need someone they can say, what else do you do? Big and strong, that's something they're missing for sure. He kills penalties, that's something that's always welcome, that's outside the goal scoring role. So he's filled a lot of those niche voids that this lineup has had. He does something different that other people don't, so makes a ton of sense to keep him around for a while.
All right, so on that, we'll step away. We'll come back with Jim Rutherford, the executive VP of the Pittsburgh Penguins, also their general manager. More on the Jason Zucker trade. And is Rutherford done? Spoiler, I don't think so. Hockey Central continues. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet, and the NHL Network.
More Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to the program here Monday to Friday, noon to 2. Jeff Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart and Justin Bourne. Still to come an hour to Marty Turco, Dallas Stars special assistant to the president. He will be aboard Dallas is in Toronto tonight to face off against the Maple Leafs. The one thing we all love about Jim Rutherford, when he wants to get something done, he does it, and generally, he does it early. Trade deadlines do not apply. When I want to do business, I get it done. Jim Rutherford, the executive VP and general manager of the Pittsburgh Penguins, joins us now. Jim, thanks so much for doing this. Always appreciate hearing from a Hall of Famer. From your point of view, because we know these deals don't just happen overnight, how long was the process of bringing in Jason Zucker?
Well, it was a long one because it goes back to the off season when we thought we had a deal for him and we didn't. And then when they changed management in Minnesota, my friend Billy Guerin went there, and I think he was there a couple of days, and I called him and reminded him of what he already knew because he was in Pittsburgh knowing that we wanted Zucker. I said, if you get to that point when you know you're going to make your changes, let me know. And so he wasn't at that time in a position to decide who he was going to move. And I would say once he got to that point, I would say this deal probably took 2 or 3 weeks.
Jim, I'm curious about, and we'll use Bill Guerin as the jump off point here, because this is, you know, Bill Guerin's first big move, as general manager of the Minnesota Wild. Do you remember your first big move, or the move that you really wrestled with as a young general manager, and what it was like for you? Anyone you could lean on, anyone you could use for support? Because I, you know, one of the things that's not lost in this, you know, Jason Zucker trade is what you just winked at a second ago, is, you know, Bill Guerin, of course, has a relationship with you and the Pittsburgh Penguins, and that's who he went to for his first big deal. Can you recall your first, Jim?
Well, I'm not sure if this is my first, but it was one of my first when I went to Hartford many years ago. And they had some issues on and off the ice at the time. And so we wanted to change things up. And I traded a great young player. I said it at the time. I wasn't trading him because of the career he was going to have, but we wanted to change things up. So I traded Chris Pronger for Brendan Shanahan. And that was not any small deal. I didn't have anyone to lean on. I was president and GM, start of my NHL GM's career, and that was a pretty big one.
How many times, I've asked Brian Burke about this before, I think we were talking about the Bobby Hull leak deal, the Burke-Weinrich Weinrich deal, and he said, you know, there were so many times as a young GM, he'd pick up the phone and then put it down before dialing. That insecurity, oh, am I really going to do it? Did you find yourself in that situation where you're like, ooh, this is a huge deal. Do I have it to pull the trigger?
No. I mean, I was always interested to hear what other people had to say, and in some ways, you know, learning as I was going. And so talking to the veteran GMs and how they approach things and whatnot, you know, I could learn things from those guys.
Jim, just looking at your own team before this season, I don't know what your expectations were for this group, but I think a lot of us have been surprised just how great the season has gone for Pittsburgh, and not just in the big picture, but also with the injuries, you know, how resilient the group has been. Do you think that the group is where you want it to be, or do you think you'll be making additions come deadline time?
Well, I like our team. I'd prefer to be 100% healthy, as all teams would. So we'll wait until probably about 48 hours prior to the deadline to make decisions going forward. We, you know, at that point, we'll have a better understanding where Dumoulin and Marino are and when they'll return to the lineup. We also have Bukestad and Cahoon out. I would think Cahoon's going to be back long before the deadline. So we'll wait till that period of time. If we go with the group we have, I'm fine with that. I like this group. You know, there may be a little bit of tinkering at the end, but I don't see anything big.
It makes a ton of sense to do that from an injury perspective, just waiting to see kind of who you have at that time. Just in general, sort of from like a GM theory, how much do GMs let recent results, like results around the trade deadline, affect how they move at that time? Like, it seems to me the big picture of the season should matter more, but you see a lot of GMs wait till that last moment. Are they taking into consideration those recent results?
Yeah, they might. I don't know. I mean, I can't, because I've had some successful moves at the deadline and some that haven't worked out. So I think you have to look at it each individual year, see where your team's at, see what's available. And as you said earlier, I like to move a little earlier than the deadline. I find that last 24 hours seems to be a real scramble.
You're on. Yeah, your mic's on.
Sorry, Jim. I said, how big of an impact did Evgeny Malkin have while Sidney Crosby was out? And do you feel he gets enough respect throughout the league? Some people are saying, they're debating whether he should be in the top 100 players of all time. My opinion is, having played against him, I think he should be in the top 50, 75 at least. So just talk about Evgeny Malkin and what he means to this organization.
Well, I'm with you. I was one of the people voting on those top 100, and I had him in mine. And certainly the fact that I see him every day, I understand what a great player he is. But this year, when Sid went out, Gino, he jumped right in, and, you know, he led the team. The big thing that I see now this year, probably more than other, is now he has some leadership. Not that he didn't before. He'd do it in a different way, and of course he comes from a different country, so the language makes it a little more difficult for him as a leader. But there's been some things this year that he's really shown me some good character and leadership. And then, of course, everybody's seen what he's done on the ice. And you're always watching for players when they get in their 30s. You know, when does a decline start? But he's been as good this year as he's been since I've been in Pittsburgh. And so he should be a very good player for a number of years now.
With Penguins executive VP and general manager Jim Rutherford, I am curious as it relates to the Jason Zucker deal. If Jake Guentzel doesn't go down injured, do you still make that deal at the same time?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I've been asked that a few times, and after I answered it, I'm still not 100% sure. We've always wanted Zucker. We wanted him in the summertime. So I guess, yeah, probably. We didn't just do it because Guentzel was out. But with Guentzel in our lineup, certainly makes us a stronger team, and I may not have felt quite the urgency to do it at the deadline. Maybe wait till the off season.
You know, and I've told this story a couple of times over the past few days since you pulled the trigger on the deal with the Minnesota Wild. So the news breaks that the Pittsburgh Penguins have acquired Jason Zucker from the Minnesota Wild. And, Jim, I get a text from a buddy of mine, and he says, man, it must be a lot of fun to be a Pittsburgh Penguins fan, because every year that general manager goes for it. Jim, as long as you have 87 and 71 in the lineup, are you always going for it?
Yep, that's our direction here, and we feel our window's still here for this year and a couple more. And, you know, it's hard trading younger players and draft picks, but But we've found a way to pick up other players, you know, like some of the younger players we got that we didn't draft over the last year was McCann, Pedersen, Marino. You know, we go hard after the college and European and junior free agents. This is a good place for players to come because we don't have as many prospects coming in the pipeline, and it gives those guys a chance to go right in the lineup. So we do it a little different way, but we feel we still have a chance to win, and we are still picking up some younger players.
Jim, how has your team building philosophy changed since your earliest days as a GM? Do you know a lot of people say that the game has changed? Do you think that's true, or do you stick with what you kind of believed from the get go?
No, I wouldn't be around if I did things the way I did them my first year. You have to change with the times, and there's so many specialty people now, you know, specialty coaches and psychologists and everything like that, and I think it's really important, and if we could have had the luxury of having as many people that we have in Pittsburgh that have input and that give the players a better chance to win, it would have made it easier over the years. But we're in a good position now. We have a terrific staff, and we're very fortunate.
Jim, I maintain the answer to this question is goaltending or goaltender. But since you played in the NHL, which position has improved the most? Like, I go back and look at games from the 70s and the 80s, even into the 90s, and I say to myself, wow, the goalie position, it's almost night and day. Is that the one spot in the game that you, Jim Rutherford, who have seen so many games, seen so many players, so many stars, so many positions evolve, is that the one position that you look at and you say, wow, it is night and day the way this position used to be played?
Yeah, I would say if you boil it down to one position, I mean, there's a lot of things have changed. You know, the players are bigger and stronger. They train a lot more, and the technology helps, and all those things. But the goaltending position's changed the most. One, the goalies are bigger just by the fact that the equipment's better and it's bigger. But we also have bigger goalies, you know. I mean, we don't have goalies my size anymore. It'd be very difficult the way the players can shoot the puck with their accuracy and everything. We had guys like that in my day, but it was usually only, you know, 3-4 guys on each team. And now all the players can shoot the puck and have a better chance of scoring. So the goaltending, the coaching, everything that goes into it for the goalies, their style is different. It's not as much of a reflex position as it was before. It's bigger guys. They're blocking more. They just play the position a lot different.
We'll close on this one, and we talk about players and goaltenders, but how about managing? I mean, we know Jim Rutherford in a number of different ways, and not just in the NHL, but in junior hockey as well. But has the art or the craft of managing changed as significantly as the actual play itself on the ice?
Yeah, it has for me. I mean, I can't speak for other people, but we have a lot more checkpoints now, you know, a lot more things that we go through when we're talking about players or making changes. And obviously analytics has played a big part, which I believe in, I use. We have a bigger hockey staff. I have more people that have input on players going up and down and making trades, the communication with the coaching staff, all those things I think has really improved and has changed to make it a lot easier and a lot better.
Listen, Jim, it's always exciting when you get itchy to make a deal because, as we've said before, when Jim Rutherford sets his eyes on something, he usually gets it. Continued success with the Penguins. Always fun to follow you, squad. We'll catch up soon.
Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
There he is, Jim Rutherford, the general manager of the Pittsburgh Penguins. Always going for it as long as you have Malkin and Crosby in your lineup. So I asked this on the 31 Thoughts podcast today. If you're a kid playing in Sherbrooke, Red Deer, BU, whatever, and you get drafted in the first round by the Pittsburgh Penguins, do you bother to put the jersey on?
Yeah, I mean, you just never know where things are going to go, but it certainly is different than if you're drafted right now by, I don't know, the Red Wings. Yep. You know, you certainly think your odds are a little better cracking that squad. I remember I had friends who were coming up in the Red Wings system when the Red Wings were the Red Wings, and they just never prayer. They just toil in the minors until someone decides to move on.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because for the longest time, the myth around it, or the folklore around it, was, oh, the Red Wings like to over-ripen their prospects in Grand Rapids. It wasn't a matter of they wanted to over-ripen their guys. There were no spots.
Yeah.
Like, you weren't getting into that lineup, and somehow this facade about, oh, this is a strategy and they're over-ripening in GR. No, Hoedler couldn't make it because he's not going to take a spot.
Yeah.
You know, Valtteri Filippula wasn't going to make it because he couldn't take a spot.
Kyler Yamamoto gets a look last year or earlier because there's tons of spots. It's different in different organizations.
Yeah, I think, but let's remember the Leafs, they went down this route where they just traded all their first round picks and it actually bit them in the butt. So let's not pretend that you can't just keep getting rid of first round picks and be fine in the long term. But as you mentioned before, as long as you have Malkin and Crosby, two franchise players on one team, yeah, you got to go for it every year.
We all know the bill is coming.
Yeah. Chicago
all,
style or no?
Yeah, we all know the bill is coming one day for Pittsburgh. The waiter or the waitress is going to say, time, ladies and gentlemen.
JR is going to be like, oh, I forgot my wallet. I got to go.
Here's the tab. And Jim Butler is going to say, that's my Hall of Fame career. Check me out on Facebook. I'm out.
Yeah, you can live with the times between Lemieux and Yager to get Crosby and Malkin if there's another two coming another 5 years after they're gone. So.
Still to come, we thank Jim Rutherford, by the way, for stopping by the program today. Still to come on this program, Marty Turco will stop by, Dallas Stars special assistant to the president. We will talk about the Dallas Stars. They face off against the Maple Leafs this evening. You can listen to that game, by the way, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. In the meantime, we'll step away, come back and do some HC game sheets. Some interesting questions for you two gentlemen. That's next on Hockey Central. Jeff Merrick, Anthony Stewart, Justin Bourne, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet, and the NHL Network.
More Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, phone's down. We have to actually talk to one another now.
We talked about viral videos.
Briefly. I showed Stewie a video of my 8-year-old and his 3-year-old sister dragging him around in a wagon, listening to hip-hop tunes on Spotify.
What a leak.
Slice of my life.
90% of relationships is just showing people other videos now.
Here's my kid. Want to see my kid? No. Well, here it is anyway.
I can't tell you how hard it is to stifle that for me. Like, I am aware no one cares, but God, do I want to show you videos of my kid.
Or dogs, too. I'm more inclined to show videos and pictures of my dog.
Yeah.
I'm a dog guy.
I'll look at that all day long.
Yeah.
Next break, Stewie, show me some dog stuff.
By the way, that's some stance to take. I have 3 kids, but I'm a dog guy.
Now, I love them both.
Congratulations to Anthony and his wife, who will next week be on the cover of today's Parent magazine, I understand, with that stance. Use the hashtag here. It is hashtag HC Game Sheet. So this is a sort of catch-all hashtag for hot takes, chirps, questions, comments,
product recovery,
rival gifts.
Yeah, we should really have Chris to every day if he could give us something. It'd be great.
He probably does have the time, too. He's like me. He's got a lot of time for social media.
He just wants his shoes back, man. Can you blame the guy?
They're in the mail. We'll be there. Check the mail.
All right. What day are they arriving?
On the 35th of February.
Very good.
Yeah. First class.
Here's something from Dennis Schumacher, HC Game Sheet. Love, love, love the Sedins. I want to make that clear. However, I would pay to watch the Stastny boys play over them. Luckily, I didn't have to choose. Saw them all quite a few times. And let's not forget the entire Sutter clan as well. I'm glad that Dennis brought this up. I think one of the more underappreciated families in hockey are the Stastnys. If you look at, the 80s we consider to be the high mark of goal scoring. The 80s were rodeo, it's cowboy, it's 8-7 games nonstop. And Gretzky was the king of all of it, right? So the top scorer in the 80s was?
Wayne, I assume?
Wayne Gretzky. Who was number 2?
Sounds like we're going to Stastny route here.
Peter Stastny.
Oh, really?
Peter Stastny. When we talk about all the greats, when we talk about all the greats from that era, we hear a lot of names. And bleeding into the 90s as well. Of course, you're going to get Gretzky, and you hear Yzerman, and you hear Hawerchuk, and you hear Messier, and you hear all deserving, all of them. When's the last time you had a conversation about that era of hockey and goal scoring and points and production and anybody mentioned Peter Stastny? He's number 2.
Yeah. No.
He's number two.
That's like the all-time points leaders. Like Ron Francis is third overall, I think, all-time. It's like that does not come up.
Ronnie franchise. Okay, this is for you guys from our friend.
Maddie Marchese?
No. Oh. Dale Hunter's Helmet. Oh. At Hunter's Helmet. Best tweeter going. Weirdest player superstition you have witnessed. Hashtag HC Game Sheets.
I'm going to go with, there was a teammate of mine in Kingston that.
What does his name rhyme with?
Okay, John Flowers. No, it was Richard Power who he was second overall pick to the in the OHL. But he got traded to Kingston, and he was very specific on how he took his gear off and placed it in his stall. So he would take his one shin pad off, put it down, his elbow pad off, put it up. And let's just say us being the not so great teammates we were, happy with how the game went one time, and we just came by and like kicked it. So
cleaned it right out.
He was pretty upset. Where to this day, like I've seen him at the rinks a couple times. Yeah. He just sort of looks through me. So I think there's a little bit of a beef. So Richard, if that's the reason, I apologize for kicking over here. But he was very particular on how he took his gear off and placed it ever so slightly. It was like, you know, you got company coming over and you got to place the pillow in a certain spot. So it was very particular and meticulous.
You said we. Who other than you were in that group?
I'm not. Right. It was being by myself, actually.
Okay, using the royal we. Very good.
Our goaltender in college, who actually, I think he may have played exhibition games in the NHL, what up, Nathan Lawson, used to snort Flexol. Just a little bit. Just a tiny little.
What?
Just a little brain punch right before we'd go out for warm-up. Which cannot be healthy.
And there was a rumor. There was a rumor that I have never verified it, but rumor has it there was a guy that used to eat Flexol.
God,
are you serious? I don't know what's worse.
Yeah, that's like icy hot if you don't know what Flexol is. A little Tiger Balm action.
Oh man, that's gotta wake you right up.
Well, I think it probably did.
Men's League used to do a little bump of snuff, but that's about to get you right into it. We're goofballs, I guess. It's gonna get us revved up for the game. This and half a bowl. Dummies playing 9:30 Saturday night at McCormick.
Got to get her going.
Way to go. Okay, from Tom Mitchell. If you could play an outdoor game at any stadium in the world, which stadium would it be?
Oh, boy.
Have you guys thought about that?
No.
The outdoor game phenomenon, playing in one of those Winter Classics or Stadium Series games?
I think Michigan Stadium, just because it's big.
Huge.
Fit 100,000 people.
Huge.
50,000 Stewart jerseys. I think that would be a good one. Rod Stewart.
I don't know. I think one of the like iconic baseball parks probably. Just, you know, football stadiums don't do it so much. So like maybe Wrigley Field or
Fenway
something like
for
that.
Me. Fenway was the one. And they've done that Boston and Philadelphia.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, to me, it'd be baseball stadium. So I'm not much of a football guy, but I
wanted
love
to say
baseball.
Rogers Center here in Toronto, but, you know, no.
But why not maybe down Florida, play an outdoor game in Florida, somehow manage to get that going?
I'm down with that.
Florida Gator Stadium.
Why not? I love that. I love the idea. Why not play a game? Have you seen that Olympic-sized rink in Mexico City?
Yep.
Have you skated on that? Have you been down there?
No, I skated on the rink in the mall. There's a mall. They have a mall there, and the rink is actually really, really nice. Yeah,
I love the mall rink. I love the guy who jumped on for the Canadians practice in the mall. Just come on in.
Hey, guy.
Anyone's welcome.
Who did he try to hug? Was it Saku?
No, Jose Theodore.
That's right. He went to the goaltender. That's right. I was like, who's this dude? Yeah. What's this one all about? We have more, but we don't have enough time. We'll get to more HC Game Sheets. Coming up in hour two, which is on the horizon, Marty Turco is going to drop by. We'll have a look at some of the 11 games on the go around the NHL this evening. Dallas faces off against the Toronto Maple Leafs. Edmonton and Tampa take on one another, and everybody's injured. Kucherov, Stamkos, Cirelli, Connor McDavid. Leon Draisaitl keeps on rocking. We'll get on some of those games here in a couple of moments. Calgary Flames face off against the Anaheim Ducks. Calgary looking to get back to their winning ways after a disappointing loss last night at the hands of the Los Angeles Kings. We step away, albeit briefly, and return with hour two. We'll talk about the Leafs and the Stars. Who to look out for specifically on the team in green? Spoiler, Dennis Curiano. Ooh. Might not know who he is, but he's quick and he's good. Stars, Leafs talk next on Hockey Central.
It's Hockey Central with Jeff Merrick, Anthony Stewart, and Justin Bourne on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
What are you two goofballs doing? What's going on over there?
Well, we're talking about armpit sweat, and I was saying I was the guy. I was the worst of the worst.
That picture you just showed me. That's, how old were you in that one?
I think it was 25.
So what did you caption that one?
I said, "Who ordered the pancakes?"
Tweet that out?
I did. Yeah, I have no problem being self-deprecating.
That's Stu Monroe. You retweeting that sucker, Borny?
Yes, I am, as you speak.
There we go. Welcome to hour two of Hockey Central. Now, Justin, can you do us all a favor today?
Yes.
Can you run down what your schedule is today for broadcasting?
Today, on Lead Off this morning, which is a great show. Yep. It's on in Calgary with Will Nault before coming on here. I'm on here till 2.
Yep.
I am recording a breakdown, the digital studio after this, trying to find a little time to write in the middle. And then I think I'm on Hockey Central tonight before some hockey games.
This is a lot of Justin Bourne. It's a lot of Justin Bourne today.
Yeah, and I just no hard opinions to give either. So, hi, everyone.
Well, then we'll introduce this new segment called Justin Bourne Looks at His Navel. Awesome. This is part of your appearance this morning on Leadoff, as you mentioned, talking about Frederik Andersen and being pushed. What I love about this, Stewie.
What's up?
Just to cap off Bourne's day. We're going to play a Borny clip from earlier on today
and
then get Borny comment on it.
What's even more perfect is we've been talking about sweating, and nothing makes me sweat more than, like, hearing myself. So this,
we got to really get IsoCam when we...
It's like an air check.
I'm gonna get this pit sponsorship for sure.
This is Justin Bourne talking on Frederik Andersen, and then Justin Bourne comments on what Justin Bourne said in moments. This will be good.
Justin Bourne.
I think in the past with Frederik Andersen, every time he's been doubted, he's played his best hockey, right? Like he starts the season in October poorly, and then his Novembers, he's like a world beater. Every time it starts to be like, boy, is Freddie struggling? He shows us the best version of Frederik Andersen. So I think that this puts us in the situation where we're going to get the best version of Frederik Andersen, which is perfect.
Borny, thoughts?
Just excellent points. I really thought that was very thorough. Well done. Good research.
Would you like to expand on that a little bit? Because I think the point you're trying to make is this is a goaltender that probably excels when he's being pushed. Unlike the best example of the opposite was Patrick Roy. So Patrick Roy never liked being pushed. As a matter of fact, if you go back to 98 Nagano, okay, the Olympic Games, he agreed to go and play for Team Canada, provided that he play all the games. And no one else got the crease, much to the chagrin of Martin Brodeur. But he thrived without the pressure of being pushed, not so much for Frederik Andersen.
Well, it's tough to say. There just is a trend here where every time his game feels like it's not at its best, he bounces back. And we haven't seen any pressure from behind. Garrett Sparks didn't give it to him. That backup position hasn't ever really threatened his crease. And it's not that Jack Campbell is threatening his crease, but if you're Freddie, you'd be aware there's a guy coming up that, you know, if he played well enough, you know, could be in the conversation.
But I think the goal of having Freddie rested and ready to go is because the plan is to go, you know, you want to go 2-3 rounds. You got to get out of that, you know, first round, hole that they've been in the last couple of years. So I think he sees this as a positive. He, I think, welcomes it because a lot of the top goaltenders in the league, they have a guy that they work with and they work with pretty well. So he's not going to be like, oh, who's this guy coming in? He's going to welcome that guy because it's going to actually make his job easier in the long run.
Frederik Andersen starts tonight for the Toronto Maple Leafs as they face off against the Dallas Stars. Did it not feel, by the way, guys, like about a million years ago when the Toronto Maple Leafs won that pair of games on the road, the Monday in Nashville and the Wednesday in Dallas? Did that not feel like a generation ago?
Two coaches ago.
Well, that's when every game elicits like a season-altering reaction about how terrible or amazing the team is, the roller coaster is pretty steep. Big spikes,
yeah, and it's
big
just
drops.
Frustrating as a player. And again, I played in smaller markets and I could tell you a lot of the players, they don't feel that pressure.
No.
Where you lose a game, so what? And again, I know everyone's saying, they have to go 16-9. The players, they're not thinking. They're thinking about game to game to game. They understand, especially the veteran players, that it's a long season. You go in segments. You're not worried about what happened in the second period of last game. So obviously, you know, you work on some things on a day-to-day basis, but there's no panic mode, with players in the NHL.
And no disrespect to the bigger conversation, which is worthwhile from a media perspective when you say how many points they need out of this segment. As a player, it's just like, we need 2 points out of the segment tonight. So I can't play the next game. You know, I'm just going to go out my shifts tonight and do my best.
Dallas Stars have won 2 games in a row. Dallas Stars are chasing the Colorado Avalanche for a second spot in the Central. Colorado, meantime, is chasing St. Louis for first. I really like watching Dallas and have enjoyed watching the Dallas Stars going back to the Lindy Ruff era where it was last goal wins hockey. I loved it. My dream for the NHL at that point was to see a Dallas Stars Washington Capitals final. This is when still Washington was the enemy of playing defense. Mm-hmm. And it was Lindy Ruff against Bruce Boudreau, and it was going to be 9-5 games and 10-6 games, and it was going to be glorious. The thinking was, considering this is a league where you ape whatever is successful previous, that would be the new way to usher in an offensively minded NHL. We didn't get that. I've watched a lot of Dallas Stars games. I really enjoy Dallas. And there's always a couple of players that are not just good, but sneaky good, that fly under the radar. Jamie Benn, Tyler Seguin, and John Klingberg tend to dominate headlines. For me, that guy now is, well, there's a couple. Roope Hintz is outstanding, yes. But Denis Gurianov. And Maple Leafs fans saw him score a beauty a million years ago when they last played. That one at American Airlines Center. Do you guys have a sneaky, good Dallas Star player that, as much as you want to focus on Seguin, as much as you want to focus on Ben's played great lately, by the way. This is the guy you keep looking at. Who's that guy for you?
I've got two. The one I'll give, I don't want to steal. There's not that many, so I don't want to steal one from Stewie. But Radek Faksa has gotten Selke votes in the past. So yep. He's a worthwhile name. But I'll take Blake Como, just watching him play for the Kelowna Rockets and skating with him in the summer. You don't realize how talented this guy is. This guy is backhand toe-dragging people in summer league. And I was always so in awe of his talent that when he made the NHL and I saw him finishing his check, I was like, why are you doing that? You don't have to be one of those guys. But he does, and he has that element to his game, and it's given him a long career. So he has a ton of talent in a bottom six role.
I'm going
to
go with 2003 draft alumni Corey Perry.
Imagine that.
No, I'm going to go with, again.
Playing top line with Seguin and Hintz.
Gary Hanov also just, again, as soon as you mention his name, it goes back to when they played Toronto last time. He's scoring that amazing goal. And he's got 16 goals and 6 assists, and he's going for the Cy Young this year. And but let's mention also Andrew Cogliano playing in his 1,000th game tonight. So that's another guy, a journeyman that's played. He had a great college career. He came in, and he wasn't a big points guy, but he just quietly got it done. He had an Ironman streak going for a while, too,
right? Got suspended. And, yeah, that was a tough one. Players did not like that.
Before there was that big emphasis on speed, he was one of the original speedy guys coming into NHL, where he was a guy that could fly. You know, he was flying around Edmonton. Sorry, not Edmonton. He wasn't Edmonton.
Edmonton and Anaheim.
But Anaheim. So, kudos to Andrew Cogliano playing this 1,000th game tonight.
You mentioned something there, and I think it's really important as well. That was, and you've talked about this plenty, Stewie, as a coach. I love the Cogliano story because once upon a time, he was a big scorer. Mm-hmm. And you just mentioned Blake Como. Once upon a time, he was that guy toe-dragging everyone in summer league and starring in junior and growing up in minor hockey. It's called youth hockey in the States. He was an offensive star. And then you get to the NHL and you say, okay, that's not working for me anymore. You can do one of two things. Keep forcing the same thing with hopes that one day it clicks and it works at the NHL level, or you go about recreating yourself. There's an old saying that you can do one of two things. You can either try to wrap the world in rubber, or you can put on a pair of shoes. Mm-hmm. And Andrew Cogliano put on a pair of shoes and recreated himself and said, this is the environment. I'm going to do things differently. And he became, you mentioned Selke Trophy with Radek Faksa. I mean, how many years have we said that guy's stealth candidate for the Selke Trophy? Yeah. All those years.
And there's that saying, you got to get in where you fit in. You have to adapt. And I'll tell you, I didn't adapt. I wanted to be a scorer. I wanted to be a skill guy because, I had the big junior career. I had, over 200 points in junior, 35 goals a year. But you have to adapt. And it goes back to my conversation where now with, dealing with the minor hockey parents. And, we ended up winning a game the other night. And the parent comes up to me saying, oh, you know why that team didn't win? I'm like, why not? He's like, because they have a bunch of Zach Hyman's on their team and they can't score. And I'm like,
let
me tell you something here.
Like, Hyman's a point of game
if
guy.
If this team had five more Zach, that's what this team's missing is five Zach Hyman's. So again, when I'm teaching kids, I'm trying to teach them to play a good two-way game because that's what I didn't pay attention to. I was a guy that just went, took the puck, worried about goals, didn't focus on defense. I didn't know how to kill a proper penalty until I got to pro. So these kids, and you want to be Ovechkins, you want to be Connor McDavid's, but these guys are generational players. Please, please, please learn to play the game the right way. Learn how to be a good teammate because these superstars are superstars for a reason because they're few and far between. So there's nothing wrong with being an Andrew Cogliano or a Zach Kyman, because when it's all said and done, they're going to be sitting probably on the beach somewhere, not having to worry about working for the rest of their lives.
I will say that this era is kind of the first one where I think transitions are easier now than they would have been maybe, you know, when you came through. Just the style of the NHL now is more conducive to a young player coming in and fitting in somewhat. Like it used to be when you would come up, like, man, it was a rough, physical, tough slog. And if you tried to play your skilly junior game, you'd get killed. There's a little more leeway now, a little more room for some of the young guys to come in. But that does create problems, too, because the league still appreciates the guys who can do all those little things. So it's tough to know what to tell kids from where I sit. You guys see it a lot more than I do. In terms of how to educate kids how to play. But I would say the transition would probably be easier now than it used to be.
Leafs take on the Dallas Stars. Do you guys have a sense of where the Dallas Stars fit in the food chain in the Western Conference right now?
I know Stewie likes them more than Colorado.
I like them better than Colorado, absolutely.
You do, eh? Why is that?
Well, I was going to say the goaltending. I'm a big Ben Bishop guy.
The other guy's pretty good, too. That Hudobin guy, yeah, he's not
bad. I think people don't really appreciate, you know, how good, you know, players like Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin are. I know Jamie Benn had a bad start to the season.
It's been great lately.
The other night, but Tyler Seguin, he's a superstar in the league. They got the offense. They got the depth. They got third. They got the International Hockey League roster where they have the skinny guys. They have the medium guys. So they have... They're almost, and again, it's tough to compare. They're almost like the New York Islanders of the West, where they have guys that can check. They have guys that can score. They have size. They have goaltending. They have the power play weapons. They can kill penalties. So that I like that. I like that element for the Dallas Stars.
By the way, I'm killing the Chicago Blackhawks theory that we've had all year.
That got debunked on Twitter yesterday. Yes. So someone said, I'm like, well, the barometer is if they can beat Chicago. And someone's like, yeah, Colorado beat them 3 times this year. I'm like, oh, man, okay, I can't use that. I can't use that one anymore. Yeah. They got me on that one.
You know, Dallas is a fascinating team, and I really enjoy watching this squad. I've watched a lot of Dallas Stars games, as I mentioned, the past few seasons. And for this season specifically, did you guys watch much of that Carolina game on Tuesday? Dallas and Carolina?
Yeah.
Probably Dallas's most complete game all season. Like, the Maple Leafs are catching Dallas coming off their best game. Like, it's a Tuesday night, so that was 11 games that night. 10 of them were in between that 7 to 10 window. So it's a lot of flipping and bouncing around. And I'm doing ice surfing, and every time we're coming back to the Dallas game, I'm like, Dallas is playing great. Like, there's no chance for Carolina really to get back into this one. Aho scores to tie it up early, but that's about it. Like, that's it for the push. Dallas just pouring it on. Like, Toronto's catching Dallas at a tough time for the Maple Leafs. Now, having said that, watch, it's 6-1 after 40 tonight after my big mouth opens up. But Dallas played probably their best game of the year on Tuesday.
Yeah,
no, that's where Toronto's catching them.
They're facing a real squad tonight. There's no doubt about it. One of the 10 best for sure in the league. Just to sort of change topic a tiny bit and focus on that Carolina team they were playing. I'm confused about what's going on with Carolina, because this is supposed to be a team. Like, last year they went to, it was a conference final last year.
This is life without Dougie Hamilton.
Like,
you know how Calgary's got, you know, seeing what life without Mark Giordano is, and Montreal is seeing what life without Shea Weber is. And Columbus is now going to experience what life without Seth Jones is. And the Islanders are seeing what life without Adam Pellick is.
Jeez, like, we're running top pair
of
guys.
These great defensemen are out. And for Carolina, honestly, I really think it is. Well, this is life without Dougie Hamilton, guys.
Well, they got the boost when Justin Williams signed, too. But when you're missing a top guy like that, and you know, with that shot and scoring those big goals, he scored some big goals this year.
He might have won the Norris this year.
Ooh. I don't know.
No, yeah. I'm with Justin on this one.
His numbers.
I know Carlson's
actually
running away, but
yeah.
By the end of it, Dougie Hamilton would have made some noise.
Dougie Hamilton is still second in the league in plus minus. I don't know if that's a thing, but not so much for you. That wasn't the clincher.
Plus minus is more about the shooting percentage of your line mates.
Bleh. Yeah, you're probably right though.
But you know, the one thing about Carolina too, and we saw this on Tuesday, I don't know why they just do this. I'm sure there's a logical explanation. Rod Brindamore, if he's sitting across from us right now, would say, well, this is why I don't do it, dummy. But whenever Svechnikov, Aho, and Teräväinen are together, It's magical. Now, it wasn't great on Tuesday, but throughout the season, when those three are together, it's one of the best lines. I know we're all crazy for the perfection line in Boston for good reason. We saw more evidence of that last night.
It's a good name.
But
generally implies a good line.
Joe Haggerty, I think he was the one that coined it. Aho, Teravainen, and Svechnikov together, chef kiss.
Yeah, that's new age chef kiss, too.
It is, too. That is a very different 2020 line.
Yeah.
Would you rather have that line or the M&M line?
Who was on that one?
Marner, Nylander, Matthews.
Yeah. M&M. Oh, my goodness. I saw that on Twitter. It's brilliant.
Yeah, that's Paul Bissonnette. He tagged it.
He's awesome.
That's termed
done.
It.
That's a done deal.
That's not going to stick, by the way.
No, we're not doing that.
No.
Elliot's been pushing for the negotiation line.
Negotiation line.
Say that to their face.
Yeah, well, exactly. Man, he's trying to get paid out here.
Bissonnette had the great line, too. Matthew Barzal at the All-Star Skills Competition after he beats Connor McDavid. And I think his other tweet or line was, that was an offer sheet-worthy performance by Matthew Barzal.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Tampa takes on the Edmonton Oilers tonight. We ran down the injuries, Kucherov, Stamkos, Cirelli, big three for the Tampa Bay Lightning, of course, Connor McDavid for the Edmonton Oilers. The story is still Leon Draisaitl and Kyler Yamamoto and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. That line, I know it was, quote-unquote, only Chicago, but if you're the Edmonton Oilers, watching that game after Ken Holland gives that presser saying McDavid's going to be out for a little while here with the quad issue, and Draisaitl turns in a performance where he puts up 4 points, you got to be feeling pretty good about yourself. Mike Smith goes tonight, by the way, for the Oilers.
Yeah, I think he's got a bit of a chip on his shoulder because some people, I'm not going to say, maybe some might be in this room saying that, he needs McDavid to sort of drive the line for him. So, but you don't turn into a 50-goal guy by accident. Maybe a couple years ago with a guy from San Jose, maybe, but he's a world-class player. He's a world-class player. He can make plays. He's very, very cerebral. And I hope a lot of fans, watch a lot of Edmonton games because it's just the little plays that he makes. If he doesn't have a shot, top shelf, he's throwing it off the pad for assist. A lot of his assists are almost easy assists where he's like, okay, I got a guy going to the net. Let me just pass it off the pad. So he's a world-class player. And we talked about Pittsburgh with having Crosby and Malkin. They have a franchise player in Leon Draisaitl.
Yeah, I like the idea of finding out what else you have in Edmonton, because right now it's been, we know who the guys are, and if they do it, they win, and if they don't, they lose. Yeah. It's kind of interesting to see, like, all right, let's see some other guys in some elevated roles with some of the pressure on them to be the guys, if they can give them something else, that when McDavid comes back, maybe they feel like, hey, I'm a bigger part of this than I thought.
Okay, so let's throw this one out then on the table. We talked to Jim Rutherford, GM of the Pittsburgh Penguins, in the first hour. And the point that Rutherford has continued to pound home is, as long as we have Sidney Crosby and Yevgeny Malkin, we are going for it. We trade picks. We trade prospects. We are going for the Stanley Cup. Why should it be different in Edmonton right now?
Well, because they had all those contract messes that they have to be, they're still trying to clean up that they had to, right? So how's their cap situation compared to Pittsburgh? Isn't a lot more messier and a lot more due diligence they have to do?
No, you can always move.
Okay, well, I'll pass the buck and say, I don't know.
No. But no, you can, no, because you'll need to make cap moves to get players in. Like, that's one of the reasons why Alexander Galchenyuk was included in the Jason Zucker deal, was to free up money to bring in Jason Zucker and make room for his contract.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure what the cap situation is, but you can wiggle.
I think it's a winning cycle issue, guys.
Yeah.
I think the Pittsburgh knows that they're in the conversation for the Stanley Cup, and Edmonton's not quite there yet.
Well, it was a mess for a couple of years in Edmonton, right? So I think Kenny Holland, I think when he took the job, he probably said, hey, it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take, 5 years.
That's tough, though.
And maybe that's a conversation that they had with Connor McDavid. Hey, are you willing to wait? Are you willing? Because you think Kenny Holland, is he going to come in and make a bunch of knee-jerk movements and try to now, kill the future now to win now? I don't think so. He's smarter than that, is he not? He's been around long enough.
There are some that still think it should be, you have those two, you go for it all the time. But do they have the goaltending that Pittsburgh has? No.
Do they have the farm that Pittsburgh has? That's
no,
the one key.
No, because all those prospects get traded to make room for Jim Rutherford's high-profile acquisitions. We have 11 games on the go around the NHL this evening. We're going to talk to Marty Turco who is one of the funniest. When he used to work here, I used to love all of our conversations because he is one of the sneakiest, funniest guys in this industry, period. He'll get us all set for the Dallas Stars. He is the special assistant to the president of the Dallas Stars. Marty Turco joins us next. Stars Leafs tonight at Scotiabank Arena, one of 11 on the board. Hockey Central continues. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet, and the NHL Network.
More Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to the program on the air Monday to Friday, noon to 2. Glad you could join us today. Very much looking forward to this conversation with Marty Turco, the Dallas Stars special assistant to the president. The Stars are in town here in Toronto to face off against the Toronto Maple Leafs. Marty, how are you? Good to catch up again.
Yeah, Jeff. Thank you, man. How you doing?
We're doing well. We're discussing a little bit about some of the players on the Dallas Stars that may not get the headlines but are huge contributors. Justin mentioned Radek Faksa, who's always that, you know, sneaky, stealthy, Selke trophy candidate. Me and Anthony Stewart here can't get our eyes off Dennis Gurianov. When you look at this Stars team, outside of the obvious headline makers, Seguin, Ben Klingberg, who catches your eye, Marty?
Well, I'm actually glad you asked. It's tough because we got some star power on this team. You know, our numbers relative to the league may not represent it, but the wins do. And we play a pretty tight game. But, you know, other than the obvious ones, I think Miro Heiskanen is, you know, he's no longer hiding down here in Texas. His skating, his smoothness all around is just unbelievable to watch. For his size and speed, you know, Rippe Hintz is unreal too. You know, our young guys, Gurianov, that you said. I mean, these guys are coming out of cannon. They're just so fast. It's unreal. But I really like our lineup, where we're situated today. You know, when you have a Radek Faksa, like you mentioned, going up against the other team's best players on a nightly basis, his competitiveness, his skating abilities, hockey sense is really welcome to our addition of our crew. So when you don't score that many goals and you have many lines that can, and everybody plays pretty good defense, it usually works out to be a good recipe, and it's been a good year so far.
Marty, I want to ask you about Rick Bonus and one thing in specific, and we all know what Rick Bonus meant to the career of Victor Hedman in Tampa. Some say he helped, you know, save the career of Braden Coburn in Tampa as well. We know the great work that Bonus has done with defensemen for years. So Rick Bonus goes to Dallas, and two players turn their games around, Esa Lindell and Jamie Oleksiak. Is that a coincidence?
That's a really great point. I think Esa, was a hidden gem, and he was playing well beforehand. Rick just really enhanced his confidence and, his overall ability and his maturity and growth. And, you know, he's just he logs a lot of time on the ice, and a lot of nights you don't notice him. But those are good for defensemen, especially some of them, you know, that I had over the years. But Esa's been great. But I think in particular, you know, Bones has been tremendous for Jamie Oleksiak. Mm-hmm. He just this year, man, his in particular this year, just seen his comfort level grow on the ice. The mitigating of some risks, getting confidence with the puck, making great decisions. He's a heck of an athlete. He's a really big boy, and he's a good dude. And Bones has been wonderful for everybody across our hockey ops, and in particular, you're right, for defensemen. And, he's probably a little less hands-on just being the head guy now, but he's really made a difference for us.
Just looking at the season that Tyler Seguin has had and trying to make a little bit of sense of where he's at, I think it's been 17 games since he scored. He's a guy who scored, 25 goals, I think 8 different seasons, and, he's hit 40 before, been in the 30s many times. Just trying to make some sense of where he's at. Maybe you could fill the rest of us in of why maybe he's falling behind his typical career numbers this year.
Yeah, no, I think it's a very valid question, and one for us here, in Dallas, and for the crew up there in Toronto tonight. We talk about it all the time. Putting your finger on it, there really isn't much. Sometimes you just go through, you go through droughts. I mean, you said 17 games. It's felt like longer, especially for a guy that we're used to lighting the lamp. But the worry isn't as big around here, mostly because we're winning. And right. What Tyler's doing is doing winning things on the ice, you know, finishing checks, being in the right position. Leads our team, I believe, in assists and points. And so, you know, when if we were going to go play against a Tyler Seguin, it's somebody you focus on, right? So, you know, he's got a great shot. He's over there on my right side if I'm the goalie. You know, guys shaped him a little bit more. He's still getting the shots off, you know, like you want to. And so inevitably these pucks are going to start going in. And when they do for guys like that, they just start filling up the net. But the most important thing and what I'm really proud of him, he's playing and being a part of a team. And from the outside and the surface, doesn't seem to be bothering them. Of course, he wants to score goals, but at the end of the day, we pay these guys and the expectations is to win. And really, that's all that matters. And I think he'd be the first one to say, you know what, if I have to score goals to win, different story. But right now, we're getting it done because they're a really solid team. And he's a part of it. Might not be on the goal scoring side, but things are looking good. And I expect him to start filling up the net pretty soon.
Marty, have you noticed a change in Jamie Benn's game, who had a hat trick the other night against Carolina, and he has 9 of his 18 goals this season in the new year?
Yeah, I have. A little pep in the step. you know, we needed his leadership, you know, after the Winter Classic. We had a little lull, and he's the kind of guy that, you know, wears he leads by example. And when he's going and finishing checks, and, you know, we don't care for him fighting all that much, but he steps up, protects the guys, and he's a bull on the ice, and he is by size and speed, but also with his ability and the way he can lead a team to victory and just put a team on his shoulders. There's not too many players in the world that have that capability, and he just really took it upon himself to elevate his game, and it's a real treat to watch. It's uncanny, the size and the heaviness he plays with, that he also has the ability to, you know, have his head up and make him just small creative plays. And, man, he could shoot it. And last game was a game where he's all in and was our best game, you know, for 60 minutes and probably a month or so. And when you got a guy like that leading the way, playing that way, and then, you know, of course, getting a hat trick, that's just a cherry on top. But he really just elevated his game. I think he understands the importance of the way he plays, and others will follow him, and he's taking it to heart and showing on the ice.
With Marty Turco, he is the special assistant to the president of the Dallas Stars, Dallas and Toronto, tonight at Scotiabank Arena. You mentioned Winter Classic here a second ago, Marty, and that was, for me, I mean, outside the presentation was fantastic. It looked great, came off wonderful on television. I can only imagine what it was like to be there. It looked fantastic. But the game itself, like, Marty, we're used to these games and the guys, just because of the conditions and different environment, and it's outdoors, it's not controlled indoor and everything, we're used to the guys going between 70 to 80%. And I think that, you know, sometimes that might even be generous. I looked at that game, Marty, and that was, for my money, based on all the Winter Classics, all the Stadium Series, the Heritage Classics that we've seen, that's the best outdoor game I think the NHL has presented. Your thoughts on the Winter Classic this year?
Well, I'm really glad you asked. I'm really proud of that we got the game, but the league took stock in you know, the southern parts. We're the first team to get that. It's just a testament to the city and the fans and our youth hockey too here, and certainly our organization, you know, from Gilardi on down. And the game was unbelievable. You know, when I first thought of it, and I know Brad Alberts, our president, pushed for it. We had the draft a few years previously that went really successful, and that's probably just enough to put it over the edge for the league to commit to coming here to Texas. And then when you know, we have a few buildings around town that are pretty nice too, but when we finally made the decision, the league did, to do it at the Cotton Bowl, an iconic stadium here with a lot of college football history amongst other things, to do it right in the city of Dallas, right next door at Fair Park in downtown. And just to go off the way it did, I mean, I was there. I was probably in 6-7 different seats saying hi to people, doing different things. And I was like, this is – you can actually watch the game. And I was warning people. I was like, you know what? It's a hockey game in a football stadium. Come and have a good time. It's going to be an experience. And I personally was blown away by the venue, how you could see it. You can actually watch – like, we were watching the game. And then I saw, got to see it on TV in certain parts, and just it did look good. And I probably don't agree with you totally on the other games. The guys are only going 75-80%, but this particular game was a rival game against the Predators. Played the playoffs last year. They got a good team. They care. Our guys do. It went really, really well, and it was really fun to be a part of. I'm just proud of our organization and the league for coming here and then hitting a home run. It was quite spectacular for an outdoor game.
Marty, I have a goaltender-specific question for you there in Dallas. Sort of checks all the correct boxes for you. Just looking in your guys' crease, and I'm looking at the top 10 in save percentage in the NHL, and Anton Khudobin and Ben Bishop sit at 5 and 7. They're both inside the top 10, 928 and 924 save percentages. Are they both having exceptional seasons? Or, well, I shouldn't say or, but do you think the system that you guys play influences their save percentage in a positive way? Like, could you put an average goaltender in there and have them have more success? Or are these guys having years that are that special?
I would lean towards that they're just having years.
Yeah.
And not even years. I mean, Bish is...
Careers?
He has decades, yeah. This guy's just perennial every year, solid goalie. Dolby's playing lights out, too. He's just fun to watch, you know. These guys they work hard. And don't get me wrong, the goals against is a little more reflective of it. But when you have a high save percentage, you're still giving up shots and chances. Maybe you're keeping a few more to the outside. But I'll tell you, man, American Airlines Center used to be a tough place to get a high save percentage. And trust me, I know. I'm like, the guy's too far away. I remember even Belfour when we moved in there, Eddie was always like, man, I just made three saves. The guy only counted one. I'm like, he's a mile away up there. I don't know how he sees this stuff. So for these guys to have it here, a high save percentage, they're certainly our 1-2 rock that's really given us the lifeline to have success. We do play a defensive style system. You can see it with the way our guys, our points are down relative to the rest of the league. You know, we don't have our highest guys in the 40s. So, but that's the recipe we want. We choose to do it. We keep things tight, and we've been on the better side of the ledger most often. But those two guys, you know, Dovey and Bish have been really the rock behind it all. I think they're having just great years. The system does help, but certainly it's more so just kind of quality of goaltenders and the seasons that they're having.
Okay, Marty, I want to close out with a question about you. And this is going to take you all the way back to the University of Michigan days. This is pre-NHL Marty Turco. Bill Armstrong was always credited with inventing the lacrosse move goal. Now, Andrei Svechnikov has, you know, done it. Philip Forsberg this year as well. So it has now officially come to the NHL. But the person who popularized it was a former teammate of yours, Mike Legg, at the University of Michigan. What did you think when you first saw Mike Legg either try that in practice or try it in a game? And did he ever try it on you?
Well, it's known as, I mean, I see it mostly in print as the Michigan goal.
Yeah.
And people who know, they call it the Legger. And as it should. And I know Armstrong did it first, and that's where Legger actually learned the move. But I'd love to give a little context. I mean, what most people don't know is they've seen him score. It was an NCAA tournament game. We were losing 2-1. The Minnesota Gophers were all over us. He scored the goal. Just shook the core of that building. You know, we knew what happened. They knew what happened. Most of the fans had no clue. But that just changed the complexity of that game. We went on to win a national championship 2 weeks later, the first one in 34 years of at Michigan. And, you know, it was a big burden off Red Berenson in our program, not winning the big game. And it had a lot to do with that goal. And so it's well-deserved. He won an ESPY Award, too, for it and traveled the world. Most people kind of forget that part. But anyway, he tried it. I mean, the first day I was ever on the ice with Mike Legg, a little London, Ontario boy, I realized how good his hands were. And then I just saw him flip that puck up like nothing. And he did it so smooth. And he did it every day. And he didn't do it once. And I had to, you know, have a few talks with him. Might have been with my stick a few times. I mean, he was so good at it. He'd come down to warm-ups or into practice, and he would do that. You know, this is in 1994, 95. And he'd flip it up while he's skating and just shoot it, you know, behind his back, a lacrosse style, basically. And you know what? You know, we don't talk about his goalies. We have the credit of that, of a black puck sitting on a white ice. And if I get knocked around or I lose the puck, I just have to look on the ice. But in lacrosse, these poor goalies with no equipment on, too. I mean, this thing, it could be anywhere. It could be 1-2 inches off the ground. It could be, you know, 6 feet, 2 feet over there, someone's head. And it's really hard to pick it up. And he was scoring on me, hit me in the shoulder. I had no clue what was going on. I'm like, Lager, listen, you put that thing on the ice, I'm going to kill you, you know. And before that game, you know, so Mike was a junior, and you know, Red, and he's the last guy up the ice. He's loved playing hockey. He's an awesome dude, good father. He's out in British Columbia now as a firefighter. And Red, our coach, he's like, maybe you should try that sometime. And lo and behold, you know, he went and scored it. And my favorite part of it, and I think we invited him over that night when we got home. Someone had a keg of Killian's Red beer sitting on our porch, ice down. And I was like, man, we felt like we made it, you know. But we called Lager. We're like, it was probably because of you. And Billy McCall was there, too. And he was he was MVP of that weekend. Anyway, we enjoyed a nice Killian's Red, reminiscing about it. And it makes me think, my cousin Mark Muzzin and I, we got a brewery in Ontario down in Kingsville, called Kingsville. I think often that night of just how happy I was to be part of that program, that team, drinking a Killian's Red and just thinking, man, life couldn't get any better. And now I've got a brewery ourselves. So I get back to Ontario all the time. It's a blast. And anyway, thank you for reminiscing with that one. It was a heck of a memory. And now I'm seeing guys do it all the time. I got yelled at on Twitter because the Carolina guy, he scoops it off the ice.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm like, man, how thin is this blade? You know, like,
right?
It's got to be illegal and dangerous, you know? Like, I mean, Mike would have to get down there and do the flick job, but this guy's just scooping it. I'm like, this guy's got a shovel on the end of his blade. What's going on here?
No kidding. You know, I always thought, you know, when they do the All-Star game and they should bring out more alumni, I still think that Mike Legg should be one of the players, because now that is in the NHL, we go back to Mike Legg for that goal. Marty, thanks for the trip down memory lane, and thank you so much for shining the spotlight on your Dallas Stars. Much appreciated, pal. We'll catch up soon.
Yeah, and I appreciate you guys. Have a good one. Stay warm up there. We'll talk to you soon.
There he is, Marty Turco, Dallas Stars special assistant to the president, Maple Leafs, and Dallas Stars this evening. Excuse me. One of 11 games on the go around the NHL. I will clear my throat as we go to break and remind you, you are listening on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, watching on Sportsnet and the NHL Network. Maddie Has Questions is next.
More Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Video. Oh. Welcome back to Hockey Central. Maddie Marchese, our producer, is in here showing us goofy dog videos. Really come to that on the program. Just trying to amuse ourselves with dog videos.
Listen, with all the talk about sweat and perspiration and all that on this show today, that would be a vast improvement talking about dogs.
I don't know, man. Geez.
According to who?
Stewie's tweet game is real strong now at Stu Monroe.
That Photoshop.
Yeah,
is good. One of the best that I've seen. I got to give you credit. I don't give you credit for a lot of things, Stewie, but I'll give you credit.
Don't thank me. Thank BlackBerry and its amazing software and Photoshop
capabilities. Hashtag sponsored tweet.
That he can do all in a matter of seconds. We only have a few seconds for Maddie Has Questions. Spent a little bit too long with Marty Turco, which we always appreciate and always enjoy the old Sault Ste. Marie goaltender.
Things we missed. Victor Olofsson back.
Welcome back.
Tonight. Too little, too late. Jay Bouwmeester on the IR to no one's surprise, and it sounds like he is doing well. So our thoughts go out to him, as you talked about yesterday.
Wish our speedy recovery.
Yes. On this day in NHL history in 1999, Maple
Leaf
Gardens.
Sounds like a Stewie setup.
Yes. Maple Leaf Gardens hosted its last Toronto Maple Leafs game, a 6-2 loss against the Chicago Blackhawks. Do you guys know who scored the last goal?
Yes.
What? No chance you know that.
Yeah. No, it's not that difficult. So you don't know is what you're saying.
I don't know, but I know who was there taking partaking in the first intermission festivities.
Oh.
You?
Yeah, I was there for the hardest shot competition. I think I was in Pee Wee.
Really?
And it was me versus some guy from, I think, Sun County.
Chara?
And it was
Chara played Sun County?
And I think I fired like a 36 mile an hour.
Gunned it.
Yeah. How old were you?
I think I was 12.
Get off the ice.
It was a muffin.
Bob Probert.
Yes, sir.
Ooh.
And I was going to ask if you guys have any memories from that arena. Maybe were you?
Oh,
did you ever attend a game there? You were too West Coast for us then.
Two things. So I used to go to a lot of games, not just Maple Leafs, but also I would go see Toronto Toros there, I go see doubleheaders with the Marlboros. Because one of my first loves is junior hockey and wrestling. when the Tunnies ran that promotion. And three things always stand out to me from Maple Leaf Gardens. One, the troughs. And any man
still have those in Buffalo at the football stadium.
Any man that's that ever went to Maple Leaf Gardens and had to relieve himself knows all about the troughs at Maple Leaf Gardens. But that was, at that point, I think the only place in Toronto you could get two things, Fresca and Frutella. And that was always the big treat. My dad and I would go. Sometimes we'd buy scalpers tickets. But we'd always, I used to go like 15, 20, 25 games a year. And then Toros and then Marble. We spent a lot of time there as a family. My dad and I specifically. And that was always the big treat. Fresca and Frutella, son.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Let's watch hockey. I don't remember much, but I remember the color yellow. Was it very yellow there?
No, the gold. The first chunk of seats was the golds, yeah, and then reds, and then greens, and then grays. Although people will tell you the blues at each end.
Yeah, and I actually played a Timmy Tyke tournament game there.
Oh, same, yeah.
There's like six people in the stands. Yeah.
Yeah, we took a limo down there. We were 6 years old. Two NHLers, or two guys that got drafted at the NHL.
I always love the big cloud of smoke right in front of the "Please Do Not Smoke" sign, too, as well at Maple Leaf Gardens.
The smell of popcorn and Haagen-Dazs is what I'm reminded of. My dad used to take me to games there. That's the reminder. And the banners in the hallway when you'd walk through the concourse.
It was great. I loved it. Loved the old Maple Leaf Gardens.
Another on this day for you, Stewie, in 1975, Bobby Orr recorded an assist for his sixth consecutive 100-point season. He was the first player in NHL history to do so, six consecutive 100-point seasons. Will we ever see another defenseman reach the 100-point plateau? John Carlson may get close.
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so, too. I think the game is trending in a more offensive direction. We're seeing goals on the uptick. We're seeing a guy this year get fairly close. I don't think it's out of the realm of – it's not impossible.
And let's keep in mind Quinn Hughes and Cale Makar, they're rookies. They're getting they're not getting close to that yet. But in a couple of years, I think they'll be testing that that mark.
Matty, can I jump in with one real quick question
for
Justin? Our show. Come on, it's a family affair here. And by that, I mean it's our show. For you, Justin, what was your Maple Leaf Gardens? What was your rink growing up?
Yeah, you know, it's Nassau Coliseum is still my, you know, has a hold of my heart.
Here come the cup stories, Stewie.
you know, it's funny. How about this, though? So I go to Nassau Coliseum all the time as a kid. My dad does win cups there. It's very special. Yeah. They retire his jersey there at one point. I met my wife on that trip, so it had a lot of meaning to me. I actually got to go there as a player as part of an NHL training camp when I was in the Islander system. And the main camp was held. The fitness testing was at the Coliseum. So I hadn't actually been in the dressing room. And I don't know how many years, and they had done some renoing. So I brought my bag in, and I was standing in there, and I was like, okay. So I hung my stuff up and started to change. I was like, where's the dressing room? Like, as all dressing rooms now in the NHL, you have a change room, like a proper locker room where you hang up your outside clothes and change into your undergear. And then, and they were like, no, this is it. I was in the main dressing room, and I thought it was a locker room to take off my outside. That's what the facilities are like in Nassau Coliseum, and that's why an NHL team just can't have it.
Matt Sundin's birthday today.
Hey.
Greatest Leaf of all time?
Yes? No.
Yes.
Well, Darryl Sutter would be in the conversation.
Dave Keon.
Are you a Salming guy?
Matt Sundin there. I loved Boreas Salming. I think one of the most important, not just Maple Leafs, but players of all time was Boreas Salming. I'll put him in that conversation. But yeah, for me, Dave Keon.
I think people are just upset he went to Vancouver. So,
Sedin's top five, easy.
Yeah, Zdeno Chara gets the maximum fine for his cross check on Brendan Gallagher.
5,000
should have been a suspension, right?
Why?
Absolutely not.
Does everything need to be a suspension?
Here's the thing: he cross checked a guy, and he's huge. It's just the heat. You're allowed to be big. You know, there's lots of cross checks thrown over the course of a game.
In the face?
It's Brendan Gallagher.
In the neck bone?
I can only, when I hear in the face, I can only think of Rob Riggle in Step Brothers.
Got another quickie?
In the face. Yeah, I thought that was a suspension. I know he's big, but come on.
Stop messing with Chara.
Tell me about all the shifts that Gallagher missed after.
Doesn't matter.
Zach. None.